Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Would you know the symptoms of ovarian cancer? New research out shows that 79% of women, like 79%, are not confident that they'd know the signs or the symptoms if they were told that they'd had ovarian cancer. And it's another, I think, just frightening figure as well. We've one of the highest death rates of ovarian cancer right across Europe, which is just such a stark figure to read. But ahead of World Ovarian Cancer Day, which is on Sunday, I'm joined in studio by Melissa Harris today and also Professor Donal Brennan, who's a Professor of Gynecological Oncology at UCD. You're both very welcome to the programme. Melissa, you might tell us maybe a little bit about your own story, your own experience, and just when did you notice something wasn't right?
So mine was actually quite, I've actually clear cell carcinoma of the ovaries. So mine was quite quickly, and I've also stage 4 endometriosis. So I've actually had 7 surgeries prior to the 2 surgeries since my diagnosis this year.
Okay.
One was in September. And like I said, it happened very quickly. I had leaking is the only way I can describe it. So I was going to the toilet as normal.
Yeah.
And then I would go to the loo and my underwear would be soaking wet, like a wet patch. And then I was looking and I was like, that's strange. I remember being on the phone to my mum a few minutes later. I said, that's really strange. And then it got worse. So it was all over within 3 weeks, literally. So week one, leaking. Coming to the end of the week, it was getting worse. I was going to the toilet. I wouldn't even feel like I was leaking until I went in. My underwear was soaking. So I went to my GP. They tested my urine, said the sign of maybe a slight infection. We'll put you on antibiotics and see if it works. If it doesn't work, we'll bring it back. Went on the antibiotics. Week two, it started to get worse. I remember getting my nails done and work, and I stood up and I literally soaked myself. It was literally, but it was like pure water. So it was very confusing to me. I know my symptoms from the endometriosis. I know my pains. I know when a pain is literally just a pain or a cramp, or whether it was from the extensive endometriosis that I had. And then, so that was week two. Went back to my GP. I was trying to figure out, was it my coil? Maybe I have, you know, you go on Google and you're searching
I know we're all experts.
And I was like, I read something like maybe the coil could have been in the bladder, like sticking into the bladder, it could be causing something. So I said it to my GP, but it was getting like really bad, you know, and it was starting to affect me where I was going home from work. I feel absolutely soaking. I was going through 7 to 10 pads a day of the maternity pads, so like that, okay, like nappies. Now I mean soaking wet. I'd go home, I'd have a bath or a shower. I started to get really upset. I remember a housemate and I just started crying because I was waiting for a scan and it was down as urgent and I hadn't heard anything back from it. So the end of week two then, now I had no pains whatsoever. Going into week three, I started to get the pains. My stomach started swelling out and I started to get really in agony. I was sitting on the couch after only having a bath about 10 minutes prior and I said, surely I'm not soaking through already. And I stood up and it was soaking through onto the couch. So it was literally just pouring out of me. Then I went to bed. I was getting really distressed now, really uncomfortable, sore. And I remember lying in the bed and my stomach was like I was pregnant. It was hard as a rock. And right at the bottom of my stomach, it felt like a metal plate was from left to right. It was literally like a metal plate. And I said, something's not right. So I ended up going into work because I was actually booked up with makeups that I couldn't pass over. And I was in agony and I continued with, I think, about 3 or 4 makeups. And I jumped in a taxi and went to A&E. And then I was in Beaumont. They'd done all the tests. They said, it seems like your bladder is full. Can you go and empty your bladder? I says, yeah. Went to the loo, went to the toilet and went as normal, like as if I was going to the wee, like empty and fully. Came back out and he said, that's strange. He says, it's like there's 800 mils of urine or water still in this. Something's not right. So they ended up trying to drain like a catheter, which was extremely painful and uncomfortable. That didn't work. And then they did CT and they got another doctor to come to me and he says, it's actually not your bladder. It's actually a cyst the size of a football. Now, I was under my endometriosis team, my gynae team in Tala. So they recommended that I go home. And first thing that morning, that I was to go straight to Tala. So I woke up the next morning, I was still in pure agony. I started to get pain in my left leg. I said, why am I getting pain in my left leg? Went to Tala. Long story short, I ended up getting a blood clot in my leg. They transferred me to Mr. Faraz's team in James's. And it just went downhill from there. Blood clot. They told me I could die on the table. I had to get a filter in my neck. They removed my whole left side because it was extensive endometriosis, even though I had multiple surgeries for the endometriosis. Mr. Raz said I had years and years of endometriosis. They removed my left orbit, my left tube. Thankfully, I survived the surgery, and I actually had nerve damage in my leg, severe nerve damage in my leg. For the next 3 weeks, I was waiting on the results. I had no time to digest anything or think about anything.
And it all happened so quickly as well.
Oh, Melissa, it really did. Yeah. And I think if I had it digested, I'm actually in a messed up way. So happy I didn't have time to digest, because I always had the fear that I wouldn't be able to have children. And then when they removed my left side, really, they said my right side looked quite healthy. And if I think I had digested that, I would have been like, oh, maybe it's a chance now I'd be able to have children. Whereas because I was in severe pain with the nerve damage, like I have to have someone rub my foot from the beginning to the going to bed. It was in agony. By the time I got the results, I was brought in a week later. So 3 weeks post the first surgery, I said I was diagnosed with clear cell carcinoma, very aggressive, stage 1C, 2. And I was brought in for a radical hysterectomy a week later. Both were open surgeries. And then it was a couple of weeks later, then I started my intensive chemo of 6 cycles. So it's just been crazy.
It's been a very tough time of it, Melissa. How are you now?
Do you know what? I'm a very positive person.
You are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it doesn't mean, like, I'm going to have my bad days. Like, I have, all the way through it, I have documented it, which has helped me. It's helped others. I've been kicked down so many times with the endometriosis, and this, nothing's going to keep me down for long. I'll have my cry, and then I get up and I keep pushing forward, and I look at the positives. You know, like, I won't be able to have children of my own, but that doesn't mean I won't be able to make a child very happy in the future, you know. So there's always positives. I feel great now that I finished my treatment 5 weeks ago.
It's just 5 weeks ago.
So I'm feeling happy I'm back in my salon. I only opened a new salon last May. So the fact that that's even survived this crazy time.
Where are you based?
Concealia Malahide, Luscious Makeup and Hair. So I'm just, that's my baby.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of sad, but it makes me smile. It's my baby. And I think the main thing now is making awareness now. I'm so passionate about that now.
Well, you've a great, positive, you know, really determined attitude, you know.
It gets me through,
meeting you today. Professor Donal Brennan is with us as well. I suppose, Donal, probably what is maybe difficult to get your head around is that, you know, when you talk there, Melissa, about your symptoms, they're often, like, they're certainly not what I would have imagined you associate with ovarian cancer.
Yeah, and I think, Andrea, it's the problem is that the symptoms that we are talking about today are very common, and many women have them. But I think Melissa's story, and it's an amazing, it's one of the great things about the job that we do, is to work with people like Melissa. And Melissa's not a patient of mine, but we have loads of patients who are so good at telling their story, because she's told the story far better than I would. The symptoms that we associate with ovarian cancer, we call them the BEAT symptoms, and they're bloating, eating less or feeling full early, abdominal pain or pelvic pain, or changes in toilet habit, be it that bowel or bladder habit. But of course, hundreds of women have those symptoms.
Would you need 2 out of 4, or would you say to yourself, oh, maybe I have noticed a change in this? Or, you know what I mean?
Is it like? Yeah, so it's interesting, because I think the first thing you would need to think about is, are they persistent? Because depending, particularly in women who have not gone through the menopause, of course, they will have certain times in their cycle when they will have bloating and they will have some pain. And like Melissa, who had severe pain with her endometriosis, was so used to pain. But I think she said very clearly there, she knew herself something had changed.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And in fact, when you talk to women who develop recurrent ovarian cancer, I rarely have to do a scan. The women themselves come in and tell me that it's back. They recognise those symptoms. And they are the symptoms of bloating and eating, or feeling full early in particular. Now, the interesting thing in Melissa's case is, you know, she actually got herself looked after very quickly. And she's been diagnosed at an early stage with stage 1C ovarian cancer because she was aware of her body and because she managed to get in and get sorted. Remember that 70 to 80% of women are diagnosed with stage 3 or 4 cancer because there's a delay in actually getting them through the system. So she's a great example of somebody who listened to her body, and she's a really good example of actually why these symptoms work, because here's a lady who had a history of chronic pain, endometriosis, but she was able to detect a change herself and then go and get seen fairly quickly. And I think that kind of solidifies our argument about telling people about those symptoms.
I mentioned at the outset today, because of the new research that's out, 79% of women said that they aren't confident in knowing the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer. Why is that, Donal? Like, when we compare that, we'll say, to the likes of cervical cancer or breast cancer. You know, we know about the breast cancer. You do the breast check, you do it yourself. We get graphs and booklets on how to do it. But what is it with ovarian that it's not?
Well, there's two reasons. The first is it's, and Melissa knows as well, it's quite a lethal cancer. So an awful lot of women will not survive very long with ovarian cancer. Now, Melissa's in a good place because she's got early stage cancer. And because of that, of course, there isn't the same number of advocates out there telling the story. And ultimately, it is that story, that human story, that we'll get far more out of this from listening to Melissa's story of her illness rather than me talking about the disease, ovarian cancer, because her story will strike home. Ultimately, it's a disease, it's known as a silent killer because of the fact that these symptoms are still vague, and they kind of grow insipidously on people, and people kind of get sick relatively slowly. If you consider that, compare that to, say, cervix cancer, you know, if a lady has bleeding after intercourse or bleeding in between her periods, she will usually go to her GP or go and get checked. And hopefully now, after all we've gone through with cervical check, she will realise that even if her smear is normal, that doesn't mean anything. Likewise, an awful lot of women will either self-examine and identify breast cancer themselves, or they'll attend for screening. Mm. There is no screening for ovarian cancer. There's no test, because we don't understand really how and why it happens. And that's the difference between cervical smears, where we know that if somebody gets infected with the HPV, with the HPV virus, and if they unfortunately don't clear it over a period of 10 to 15 years, they might develop cancer. And we know if we intervene early, we can actually reduce their risk of getting cancer. We really don't understand how ovarian cancer starts, and that's the problem.
The other, I suppose, misconception is that the smear test, or what is now, I suppose, the kind of the HPV, the cervical test that we all go for every couple of years, that doesn't pick this up. And I wonder, do people think that it does?
So many people. Like, I've been speaking to every client that comes in. I don't even wear my wig now. I just, you know, I say I rock the bald. I just, so it brings up the conversation naturally, do you know? And so many women turn around and say, oh my God, Melissa, sorry to hear that. We did they find it through your smear? And I'm like, no. Even this morning, the amount of clients, I'm in work since 7 o'clock this morning, and every single client that did this morning, when I told them that they can't detect it through a smear, their faces dropped. He says, I can't believe that.
Is there a need for a sort of a nationwide campaign or something similar, Donal, do you think?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to do as part of World Ovarian Cancer Day. And, you know, this is work that was commissioned by the Irish Network of Gynae Oncology, which is a group of people both working in research and clinically who've come together to try and increase awareness. I think what we've done this time, we've had a number of World Ovarian Cancer Days, and we've had quite successful situations where we've actually promoted certain things. But this time, particularly with Melissa's help, we've actually run a campaign this week to try and really focus on these symptoms, these beat symptoms. And, you know, I think if we can just focus on that bit alone and, you know, empower women to get themselves checked if they do have those symptoms. And I suppose one thing to be very careful of is, oftentimes people come into my clinic and they say, oh, sorry, I don't want to waste your time. I would far prefer that a person would come into a clinic with the symptoms and we would be able to check them out and say, you're fine, rather than the counterpart, which is where we spend sometimes 7, 8, 9 hours operating on women with ovarian cancer.
Listen, I want to thank you both for coming in today and just, you know, bringing us through, I suppose, the signs and the symptoms to look out for. But Melissa, to you as well, you know, more so for coming in and just sharing your story. I know a lot of people in the text line here are getting in touch to just say, you know, fair play to you for speaking out. It's so important that people are aware, and we do need, like Donal mentioned, an advocate or somebody, you know, to kind of highlight
the
issue.
And I just want to mention as well, because this might help a lot of ladies out there that might be going through the same thing and maybe starting the chemo and they're thinking, oh my God, it's just going to be pure hell all the through it. Yes, my particular situation was a nightmare. It happened bang, bang, very fast. Like, you know, but it's not all bad. Like, you'll have your good days going through chemo, you know. And when you have your good days, you may not feel strong enough mentally because you're going through such a trauma. But if you feel good in your body, get out, go for a coffee, go for lunch, meet friends, enjoy them good days or your good week, because, you know, I find sitting around, and I found me in particular, I actually worked most of my chemo, because I found, especially near the end, my mind would just go into overdrive. I'd just be thinking, oh, what's this pain, like, especially with the bone pain with chemo. But, like, I could feel it every moment. But when I went into work and I was blow drying and I was looking after all my lovely clients, I couldn't feel that bone pain. The mind is a powerful thing. It really, really is.
You're heading back out to work now?
No, I'm finished with
it. You're finished with Absol. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, because I thought when I saw you with the uniform on, I was thinking, you're not going back.
This morning, so no, chill.
Yeah,
we'll
go on and enjoy a nice lunch. Listen, thanks a million. Melissa Harris for coming in, and Professor of Gynecological Oncology, UCD, Donal Brennan, thanks for your time on the programme today. 1800 453 106 if you want to get in touch.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Avant Money.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.